As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of Atlantic and Coastal, the Athletic's ACC podcast. I am your host, Andy Bitter, the Virginia Tech football beat writer. I say football beat writer, that's why we always bring in basketball experts onto the show. As usual, we have Brendan Marks, our North Carolina and Duke basketball writer. And this week's special guest, Dane O'Neill, senior writer at The Athletic. She writes college basketball as well as anybody out there. Dana, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. Glad to do it.
We have a jam-packed show this week, and I feel like the ACC finally got interesting again. For a while there, it was just like, yeah, Duke and North Carolina are pretty bad. Like, half the teams are on a pause right now because of COVID, and UVA is running away with the conference. And all of a sudden, all that changed in the matter of a week. Hopefully no breaking news right after this podcast happens. That seems to happen every time. I think once we're done today, next week, it's going to be like immediately after the show's over, they're going to announce that Duke and North Carolina are like trading coaches for the rest of the season. Some big news like that. But we're going to proceed, and hopefully nothing big will break like it did last week. And we're going to start with Duke. Because Duke, all of a sudden looks back from the dead. If this was a gif, it's the Undertaker sitting up in his grave ringside for the contemporary reference there. Maybe Michael Myers in Halloween sitting up in the background for some of the older folks out there. That was a good week for Duke. Bouncing back, beats Wake Forest, beats Virginia in a great game on Saturday, 66-65. All right, I'll throw it out to you guys. And Brendan, I'll start with you as the Duke expert here. Duke is back, right? This is it. Duke is back.
You know, we have tempered expectations. We have always pressed the brakes when it has come to Duke is back talk on the podcast this season. But I mean, for once, there are signs that maybe, yes, we are close to that. I don't think anyone is saying, you know, those first two wins this week, NC State and Wake Forest, those are against teams that had a combined, I think, 8 wins in the ACC. So, you know, let's cool it a little bit. But certainly, yeah, the Virginia win, I mean, this is the resume booster, statement win, whatever you want to call it, that Duke needed. And to finally get that, if Duke is not back, at least they're bubblicious. And that's good for all of us because it means we've got something more to talk about.
All right, I'll look for a different answer. That Dana, Duke is back. You can tell me that Duke is back, correct?
I'd say Duke is on the bubble of being back. How's that work? Here's the thing: like, they've talked themselves into the bubble conversation, which is way better than they were a week ago. Back to what is the question? Are they back to being Duke? Absolutely not. I mean, Duke being on the bubble is not Duke, right? That's not what we're supposed to talk about. They're supposed to be a one seed. Are they back to figuring things out? Perhaps. I mean, and look, let's be honest, the schedule breaks a little nicely for them going down the run here. I mean, they've got Syracuse, they've got Louisville, who, my goodness gracious, let's not even go there. But, you know, this could be the start of something where they start rolling downhill and feel good about themselves. So, yeah, I think that they could figure things out. I will temper my Duke is back talk for now, though.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for Duke here. You mentioned Syracuse, another bubble team. Louisville, that, you know, even though it looked terrible against UNC the other day, is still a tournament team right now. I mean, that would look good on a resume to win that at Georgia Tech, at UNC. I mean, there seems like there's an opportunity there. The interesting thing with the Blue Devils, and this is the bit of news that I mentioned last week that happened right after we finished, is Jalen Johnson opted out. Like, you know, 2 hours after we wrapped the show last week, of course, because that's how it works. Interesting. I mean, they seem like they have played pretty well. Jim Boeheim, in his very, you know, well-researched opinion on things like this, said that, you know, Duke looks better than that without him. Then later he's like, admits he'd never seen him play. So, you know, maybe don't trust Jim Boeheim's word on
this. It's a great look for Jim Boeheim.
Brendan, I'll ask you, Duke, 5-0 in the ACC without Jalen Johnson. Now, those games are against Notre Dame, Boston College, Wake Forest twice, and UVA. So not exactly the cream of the crop for some of those. Is this team better off without Jalen Johnson right now?
I'm glad you phrased it that way, because I think the answer to that question is probably yes. I do think that Duke is probably better off without Jalen Johnson for a multitude of reasons, right? And, you know, we heard some of this last year with, like, for example, UNC and Cole Anthony. When UNC was struggling so much, here was this highly touted prospect, but why weren't things working? And then, you know, ultimately, you know, both have sort of benefited from separating and going their separate ways. I think for Duke, the situation is just this simple. Jalen Johnson, from a basketball perspective, did not play a style that meshes well with the other players on the roster. And more specifically, not having Jalen Johnson on the roster has opened up more natural roles for the other guys to fill. And the other guys, I'm mainly talking about the freshmen. You know, Mark Williams, freshman center, 7-footer, 5-star guy. He barely played for the most of the first half of the season. And now that Jalen is gone, he has been inserted into the starting lineup. He's a true five man. He's blocking something like 55 shots a game. I mean, he's just an unbelievable rim protector. And more importantly, by him playing in the center, by him banging around defensively, offensively, what that's allowed Duke to do is to just let Matthew Hurt hunt buckets. You know, he has just turned into a walking bucket at this point. I looked over the past three games, the NC State game, the Wake Forest game, and the Virginia game now. Matthew Hurt is shooting 77% from the field and 73% from three. He's made 14 of 19 three-pointers, and that's because he's not having to exert himself on the defensive or offensive ends the way he used to inside. So strictly from that perspective and freeing up Matthew Hurt, I do think that Duke is better without Jalen Johnson. But again, you know, you mentioned four of those games are against teams that are the bottom feeders of the ACC. So keep doing it against the Georgia Techs and the Louisvilles, and then I think we'll be a little bit more impressed.
Yeah, Hurt is also single-handedly bringing back the Moe Schrute beard from The Office. So I appreciate his efforts on that.
Bringing in the Amish.
Jalen Johnson was such an exceptional talent. I think everybody agrees he's going to go pretty high in the draft. Why was it just not a fit, do you think, for him at Duke?
Well, I think it's all those things that, you know, Brendan just mentioned. It's not just a fit with Duke as a program. It's a fit with the other players on your team, right? Like, it's got to all gel together. I will say, and look, I mean, and this is just, you know, I'm treading on dangerous Jim Boeheim territory, I guess, by saying this, but look, we all hear things, right? We've all heard through much of this season that people question Jalen Johnson's commitment to being here, understandably, in the middle of a global pandemic while you've got bigger fish to fry. I don't criticize the kid for that at all, and questioning whether or not it was worth it or not. And whether that affected how he was playing, I don't say he wasn't committed to his team, but if that sort of is in the air around the program, it affects people. I don't care whether it's intentional or not. When people think that that's, you know, floating around, it affects how the team chemistry works. It affects how people coexist together. I'm not criticizing the kid for that. It's just a reality. And when things are settled and you know where it all lays, it might work out a little bit better. So I think there's a little bit of that. I don't think Jim Boeheim was educated necessarily in his conversation, but I don't think he was dead wrong either. So I think it's a combination of things. And, you know, now it's like, all right, we now know who we are. We now know how we have to play, and we're going to move along here. I think there's something to be said for all of those things falling into place for Duke right now.
I, for one, find it hard to believe that a septuagenarian coach would just throw off opinions like that without having researched the topic deeply. Turning to Virginia, we had kind of been under the assumption that Virginia was just going to cruise along and win this thing and there'd be no drama. I don't think anybody believes that UVA is as good as they have been in past years, certainly not a couple years ago when they won the national title. But it seems like some cracks are maybe starting to show on this Virginia team. The defense not quite as good as it has been in past iterations of this team. And I look at Virginia and I go, what is the Cavaliers' signature win? And it's probably that Clemson game where they just blew Clemson out, you know, ran them out of the gym. I just destroyed them in that game. And that was Clemson coming off a COVID break. And that was, I mean, a month and a half ago, whenever that game took place. And you go beyond that and you go, UNC, maybe the next best win. Dana, what do you make of this Virginia team? And have we maybe just been kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt because they've been so good in the past couple of years that we overlook some of the problems with this team this year?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of not just that, but also nobody else was very good in the ACC, right? It's like somebody had to be good in this league. So let's take the team at least was winning more than everybody else, and that was Virginia. It was sort of by, you know, default that they had been anointed as the best team in the conference. And I'll be honest with you, watching them, and I was always kind of like, they're okay, they're good, they're not, as you pointed out, they're not the defensive team that we're used to, but they never to me had a presence. They never had a go-to guy. They never had the person that's like, that's the guy. I mean, Kihei Clark is a good player, Jay Huff is a good player, but I never felt like there was an identity to this team, like give the ball to that guy and he's the killer. There's no Ty Jerome on this team. There's not even a Kyle Guy on this team, right? And I think that's kind of something of what we're starting to see right now. I think I'm not saying they're bad by any stretch of the imagination, but I think there was sort of an anointment of because they were the best of a crummy league. And I just don't think that they are built. I don't think Tony Bennett would argue with this, frankly. I don't think they're built for, you know, a massive year this year. I just don't think they are. Does that mean that they can't come back and get their act together? You know, I would never bet against Tony Bennett, and I would never bet against them in the tournament because they are unique and they can mess up some teams along the way. But I just kind of think they're falling back to the mean a little bit.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Brennan, if Kihei Clark's shot goes in at the end of the Duke game, do I phrase the question this way? Like, what's wrong with Virginia?
I think you still do because, like, and that's the problem, though. Like, why is Kihei Clark the guy who's taking a game-winning shot with 10 seconds left against Duke? You know, Kihei Clark shoots 30% from three. He had gone, I think, 5 of 15 in that game. So, like, Kihei Clark is not the guy you want taking that, but that's the problem. As Dana said, Virginia doesn't have another guy who really can. You know, Hauser's great, Huff is great, but you know, at Marquette, Hauser was not a good defender, and that has carried over. And like you can, you know, him having a year in Tony Bennett's system, having a year to sort of learn that intensity, learn, you know, the importance of defense, I would say. I think that all helped, but that only got him up to maybe slightly above the mean, if that. I mean, he is just not a great defender. And Jay Huff, as good as he is, he's not a guy who's going to go out there and handle the ball and control the game and the pace and everything. So, you know, if you have a guard in Kihei Clark who's able to get bodied by a Duke freshman playing 10 minutes a game, that worries me. That's concerning, I think. And again, not to say in any way, shape, or form that Virginia is not a good team. I think they are. I think that they caught, you know, Florida State, a hungry Florida State who was getting back after a COVID pause. Florida State sort of had to work out some of the kinks against Wake. But yeah, at the same time, like this is a team that I think we've been saying all season, they're good, they're fine. But there's nothing special. There's nothing that really stands out. And you know, Huff is, you know, the statistics that he's putting up are crazy. I think he's maybe the only player in the country who's averaging like 60, 40, and 75. But he's not the guy making everything go. We know guards in March. And I'm just not sure that with Kihei Clark and Morcell and even Trey Murphy sort of disappeared in that Duke game. So, I'm not going to say that Virginia can't still win the ACC. I think that they're still probably one of the two or three teams that has a fighting chance at doing so. But yeah, no, I'm much less afraid of the Cavaliers if I'm an opponent today than I was at this time a week ago.
The other big story last week, I think, has to be North Carolina. Holy crap. What a beatdown of Louisville. I might have had a vested interest in that. I may have put a few bucks on the first half line for North Carolina in that
Look
game.
At you so testing out the betting lines.
I was watching with a little bit of interest in that one. Quite frankly, one of the only outcomes that has gone my way recently in some early trials of this. 99-54 against Louisville. Brandon, you wrote about it. The five-man freshman class for UNC scored 71 points in that game.
It's not bad.
No, that's pretty good. That'll do. If they do that, they're going to be an okay team here going forward. The Louisville coming off a 2.5-week COVID break. But come on. I did not think it would be that lopsided. Brandon, when you look at that outcome, do you go, that's impressive for North Carolina, or do you temper it a little bit because of the situation Louisville was in?
Yeah, I think you have to do both, there were a lot of UNC fans. UNC Twitter was going crazy on Saturday, like, oh my God, we're the best team ever now. Like, okay, calm down. Like the first time that Louisville came off a COVID pause, they lost by 37 to Wisconsin. So like the second COVID pause does really break you. And we cannot discount that. Also, the fact that Louisville was out two guys, just rotation players, but the eighth and ninth man in their rotation, they average about 20 minutes a game. And in the second half of that one, Louisville looked gassed. So I say all of these things to build up to the fact that UNC did still play its best offensive performance of the season easily. I mean, without a question. And as we had seen with Duke a week ago, and Coach K mentioned how Duke had sort of switched up its defense and how they were primarily defending ball screens, UNC has done the same now. But at the same time, UNC has implemented new offensive tactics as well. And the biggest beneficiary of those was De'Ron Sharp, who is UNC's number one recruit, five-star center, a guy who looks like he might be a first-round pick should he declare for the NBA draft. He is 6'10", built out of stone, gigantic, an incredible motor. I mean, just such a fun player to watch. But as an 18-year-old kid, De'Ron Sharp does not have an expanded array of post moves. He doesn't really know what to do when he posts up and gets the ball inside. He doesn't really have any counters. So what Roy Williams said was, okay, let's not put you in those situations. Let's get you cutting to the basket. Let's have actions that have you already in a scoring position when you're getting the ball, so you don't have to create any of that yourself. And as a result, he ends up having 20 points and 11 rebounds. And, in the first 5 minutes he played, he had five offensive boards. So UNC is always going to dominate on the glass, but De'Ron Sharp especially has been the biggest beneficiary of some of these moves. And if UNC continues to play this way, it's hard not to be optimistic. And UNC, I would say, more than maybe some of the other teams in the ACC, because of the style they play, because of that dedication to two bigs, they can really go four deep on the inside. If a team in the tournament runs up against that and hasn't seen size, that has caused problems in the past. So this is by no means me saying UNC is going to win the ACC. They're going to go far in the tournament or any of that. They're still not even firmly in the tournament. But this is a team that is starting, I think, to show signs of what you expected to see months ago. And if I'm another ACC team or a team that, has to face up against UNC in the tournament, that's something that certainly concerns me.
Yeah, UNC is so interesting because they're basically just putting open advertisements on Twitter for whoever wants to play them in the middle of the week.
It's like
hey, we're looking for a game, guys. Anybody?
Yeah, I think we should have gotten like five guys and just shown up. Like, we're here. We're good. We're playing. We're good.
That I would have bet on that one too. I think I would bet on UNC in that particular game.
The best thing about that is they had Division II and III schools actually answering in the Twitter DMs, not even on email, but literally on Twitter.
That's 2021 in a nutshell right now. Dana, this team is interesting. It feels like they're scheduling those extra games specifically just to get the experience for a lot of these guys and kind of keep the rhythm going. It's weird to look at some of the bubble stuff and see UNC is like an 11 or a 12 seed because the talent is there. Mm-hmm. Could this be a problematic team, do you think, if things come together for them once they get into the postseason?
I think so. I've always thought that among, all the, quote, blue bloods that were having issues, if you will, I always felt like Carolina had the best upside to kind of get its act together and really be the most dangerous come March. I just, you know, talent wise, I thought what ailed them was the most fixable. And I think we're starting to see all of that right now. So, you know, yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, I know we're all laughing at Roy Williams, like basically, you know, hunting games on Twitter because it's hilarious. I mean, this is like, what are we doing here? But I think it's a brilliant plan. I mean, because that is the one thing that this team needs, you know, kind of like we were talking about Duke. You start rolling downhill and feeling good about yourself. I think Roy recognized we got some traction. Let's just keep it going. And, you know, it's not going to hurt you to go play Marquette. I mean, absolutely nothing to lose there. So I think it's a great plan. And yeah, I think, you know, to all the points that Brendan pointed out about how they've kind of reconstituted their offense and it's working. I just feel like, you know, I don't see a way that they don't get in the tournament at this point, honestly. I think, you know, somebody's got to get in this thing. And I think they belong in it compared to a lot of other people that think they do. And once they get in, you know, I just feel like there's something to be said about a team that feels good about itself and has talent. It's not like, oh, these are some nice players. They got talent on this team. And they're just starting to figure out how to put it all together. So, yeah, I would not want to see Carolina if they're opposite me on a first round game in March 19th? Is that the date? March 19th.
Hopefully, fingers crossed that everything goes well as planned this year. We are 18 and a half minutes in, and we have not talked yet about the first place team in the ACC. And
welcome
the team
to
that
Leonard
took
Hamilton's
over first
wife.
Place.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. It was last Monday, I believe, when Florida State kind of took control and just blew out Virginia in that game. The Seminoles look pretty good. They look bad in that Wake Forest game. They probably should have lost that game. That was coming off their going COVID break there, but then they looked really good against UVA. They went up to Pitt, handled Pitt in a game where they did not shoot well. They shot 28% from three in that game. They still found a way to win. Dana, I'll ask you first, is this Florida State's league to lose at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not joking when I say that about Leonard Hamilton. I swear to God, Leonard Hamilton someday is going to lift the NCAA championship trophy above his head and this confetti is going to come down. And everyone's like, oh, should we talk about them? I mean, honestly, they are like the most chronically overlooked good team in the history of college basketball. I honestly can't think of another one out there. And I mean, it's not even like their football team's any good. So you can't blame it on football anymore. It's just the most bizarre thing. I think it's partially who he is. I mean, he's just a dude. He's a stoic, kind of nice, really nice guy, but that's who they are. But yeah, I mean, Florida State has long been the best team in this conference. This is not shocking. This is where we're landing. It's just a matter of the rest of us paying attention. You know, is this their best team? No, but are they the best team? And again, in a league that needs an alpha dog, they're it. So yeah, I just feel like we're heading back to where we belong. We just took a long time to get here.
Yeah, Leonard Hamilton, 72 years old, by the way.
Yeah.
Looks like he's 50. He looks like he's 50.
Yeah.
Bunny Colvin lookalike from The Wire. He looks exactly like Bunny Colvin. I'll never not see that when I see him on the sideline there. Yeah, Brendan, I've been a big Florida State fan all year, just in terms I always like their depth. I just like their style that they have. Is this all coming together for them at the right time of the season?
Yeah, but also I don't think it was ever not going right. Like a COVID pause does not by any means mean that you're broken or whatsoever. And now
but you do wonder how you come out of that.
You
if
do.
It's going to be okay.
Sure. You do, but again, against Wake Forest, like this is a team you should roll over Wake Forest. But if it takes, you know, a reverse layup from Scotty Barnes with half a second left to get into overtime and win it in overtime, that's what it takes. So, and this team can do what it takes. And I think the thing that's most impressive about Florida State, too, is that depending on the opponent, they can beat you a bunch of different ways. Like, they have so many different guys who are good at different things. Like, you know, if MJ Walker and Anthony Polite need to shoot 15 23s, okay, they'll do it. If Scotty Barnes needs to go, you know, point forward God mode, he can do that. If you need Balsa, I'm not even going to try and pronounce his last name, Koprakova. If you need Balsa to go in and just dominate and be a 7-footer inside and get boards and get putbacks, he can do that. So, yeah, and also, this is not Florida State's best team. You know, I think everyone forgets last year. This team won the ACC in convincing fashion, lost two guys in the first, 11 picks of the NBA draft. Like, let's talk about them a little bit more. But yeah, no, I think that this is a team that now, considering the week that Virginia has had, this is the best chance for the ACC to get maybe a 2 seed. I don't think that that's, I think a 1 seed is probably out of striking distance, but I do think that Florida State could end up getting a 2, sort of carrying the flag. And again, yeah, I mean, with Florida State not getting its due last year, not getting the opportunity for that team to show what it could do in the tournament, I'm really interested to see what you would do if you had to fade this team, because, you know, I don't get paid to coach basketball, but I don't know what the hell you do to try to stop these guys.
That there would be some justice to this whole thing if Florida State were to win the ACC this year after it didn't have an opportunity to participate in that last year. Do we know yet how they're going to judge the standings? I mean, there's such inequity in the number of games a lot of these teams have played. Is it going to go by winning percentage? Is that how they're going to do it?
In the ACC tournament, that's my understanding. And that's also, I think, the only way that you really can do it, especially not knowing what's going to happen. You know, what's the end date? The 26th of February for sort of sussing out what the conference tournament is going to look like? Yeah, so if you've only got a couple more days to do that, you have no idea what's going to happen in the 2 weeks thereafter. Winning percentage is the only thing you can do.
The Atlantic 10 is doing this weird thing where they're doing, like, if you've played the median number of games that everyone else has played, then it's by your winning percentage. If not St. Louis, then they're using the net ranking. But that becomes really complicated because that, so St. Louis essentially jumps a bunch of teams because their net ranking is higher, despite the fact they haven't played a lot of teams. I feel like you should just pick one. And I'm not sure that trying to, like, marry the two statistics makes a heck of a lot of sense.
No, I agree with you. The net thing is also wonky because, like, if you look at UNC and Louisville, for example, they switched places in the net after Saturday. And I don't think that anybody would say that that was equitable in any way. So, I think it's going to be win percentage. And then again, you're hoping that nobody opts out. Like, I don't think, like, Tony Bennett is going to necessarily. But, I would be shocked to see Boston College show up. Yeah. Like, why? Like, why? Why bother?
They had a great week. So, yeah. They might just want to quit while they're behind at this point.
Just for more humiliation at that. It does create an interesting scenario here because Florida State is 9-2, UVA is 11-3. UVA has 3 games left. They could conceivably be 14-3 at the end of the season. Say Florida State slips up in one of its last 4 games and finishes at that, they could max out at 12-3. You go winning percentage, UVA is the better team of that, even though they both have 3 losses, and Florida State beat the crap out of them down in Tallahassee. Like, I guess in this year of all
it's
things,
be
we can't
like
be
that.
Complaining. Yeah, you can't be complaining about stuff that just seems weird to me.
I said from the beginning of this season that whatever coach stands up on selection Sundays and complains that he did not get a bid, I'm going to take my shoe and just throw it at him. Because, like, this year, stop. Just stop.
Yeah, the idea of fairness, you know, let's just take it, trample it. It doesn't exist, yeah.
Gone.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Ken, Virginia, I think you're looking at the losses here in the standings. Virginia Tech is the only other team with 3 or fewer losses. They haven't played in like 8 weeks. It feels like they've been on such a pause here. 4 straight games they've had postponed. I mean, they're 8-3. They could finish 12-3. They could they get up there in the mix? And if they do, you're looking at the games that they have missed. They missed UNC. They've missed Florida State twice, and they missed UVA on the road. And I don't think any of those games are getting made up. How do you judge that team if they end up, we've seen teams come off a COVID break and they don't look very good. Mm-hmm. So I think they might struggle in this game against Georgia Tech on Tuesday. But say they don't, and say they win out those games and go 12-3, how do you judge them against other teams that have played a full schedule and a schedule against, teams that are at the top of the standings?
Yeah, I mean, I think the more important thing than just the games that, like, the quantity of games, like, think about those opponents they just missed. You know, I was so excited to see UNC Virginia Tech. I was going to be at that game. The opportunity to see Virginia Tech, Virginia. Like, I think Virginia Tech is still a good team. Like, you go look at their non-conference. That win over Villanova looks great. I mean, they have some marquee wins on the schedule, and the way they play, like, especially for this only being year 2 of Mike Young, we've talked about this a lot, but, like, I like Keve Aluma, I like Jalen Cohn, I like Wabisa Bide. Like, I think they have good, interesting pieces, and I think the way that they play is conducive to you know, doing well in March. So, I think that in that situation, I do think that they're probably going to struggle to some extent coming off a COVID pause. I don't think any team in the country has really been exempt of doing that. I think, you know, if you get to that situation, you've got a tiebreaker and you don't have it neat and easy. Again, whatever metric you want to pick, you can pick one, but it's not going to be fair no matter what. So, like, don't even stress trying to find something that's the most, reasonable. There's no such thing.
Nope.
Yeah, Virginia Tech, I think those UNC and Florida State games, those were the ones that I was most interested in because they have the size to make life problematic for the Hokies down low. I think both of you would probably agree Florida State, UVA, top two teams in the conference. Who would you have third? Third and fourth. Dana, who do you put in those slots?
Wow, that's a good question. probably Virginia Tech. And honestly, like I feel like I'm getting on the bandwagon here a little bit, but I think Carolina is going to end up there. I really do. I just feel like they have the most talent. I have not felt Louisville all year. And I just kept saying like, I just can't wrap my head around, maybe because, you know, they have played so infrequently and their schedule has been such a mess, but I can't wrap my head around who Louisville even is. I'm not even sure if Chris Mack can, to be honest with you at this point. I don't see them finish in the top portion of this conference. I mean, you can tell me I'm crazy and feel free, but that's where I would look at it.
I'm not going to call a guest crazy. I only call Brandon that. Brandon, who do you have in that third and fourth spot?
Yeah, I really like Virginia Tech. Like I said, you know, I think it's going to be crazy. You're probably talking about two members of the All ACC first team, Carly Jones and Keve Alunma, as transfers from Radford and Wofford, which is just crazy to me to think about. But yeah, I really like Virginia Tech. I think that they're probably one of those. And then, for me, I probably side with Dana. Probably go with North Carolina. I mean, the size that this team had, this was the first game against Louisville all year that all four of UNC's big men scored in double figures. And the high-low passing they had, the give-and-goes, they just looked so good. And again, we talk about the COVID pause, but like, if UNC is making shots from deep and Kerwin Walton, this, you know, sub-100 freshman that they brought in April,
awesome,
who is he's just a sharpshooter. He's just changed the way that UNC plays because you have to respect him. And whenever someone goes out to close out on him, that opens up space for those big guys inside. So, yeah, I think that the way UNC plays, the way that they're coming along, they're not going to have any sort of energy problems with how deep they are. I mean, they can legitimately go 10 deep. And UNC might still be getting another big man back in the next couple of weeks. Sterling Manley hasn't played in 2 years, and he's out after games, you know, playing one-on-one with Walker Kessler. So, you know, this is a team that got reinforcements in Anthony Harris, got reinforcements in Kerwin Walton, is potentially going to get Sterling Manley back. You know, I think that Roy Williams also, I'll say this, Roy Williams did not forget last season. He did not forget the jokes that we all made about him. And he is still angry about it. And I would not bet against an angry Roy Williams trying to get some revenge these last 2 weeks of the season.
Let's talk bubble real quick. I think there are three teams we could probably consider in that bubble talk. Syracuse, Georgia Tech, and I guess we got to include Duke now. Hadn't before, kind of had them out of the loop there, but I think they're in it now. Syracuse looked DOA against Notre Dame last week and then comes back, rallies from 20 points down to win that. Georgia Tech beat Pitt and then just absolutely crushed Miami, a game that wasn't even close from the outset. And then Duke, obviously, we talked about before. Dana, of those three teams, which ones do you think has the best chance to play their way into the tournament?
I mean, I know we all want to talk about Syracuse coming back against Notre Dame. Notre Dame is horrible. And the fact that they got down so badly, I mean, this is more a byproduct of the Irish than it is Syracuse, in my opinion.
Notre Dame's been frisky. They've been frisky lately. They've given some teams some problems.
They've given some teams some problems, but they're not very good. And Syracuse is getting their doors blown off by them and then rallied, you know, and everyone wants to, like, sing Jim Boeheim's praises and put them into the, no, I'm not writing that one. I'm not putting them. I just don't see it occurring. I really don't. I think you have to at some point start looking at talent and talent rises. And I think Duke has more of it. I mean, let's be practical about what are you going to trust going down into the wire here? What team do you think might actually get its act together? Why wouldn't it be Duke based on the players that they have and the way they've looked in the last couple of games and the guy that's coaching knows a thing or two. And, I know that the committee is not supposed to think these ways, but you know, if you're going to look at two names that you're going to put into your, and it's a push, and one is named Duke and one is named Georgia Tech, and you got to push, where are you pushing? I'm trying to be a realist here.
All that Josh Pastner hate from the committee keeping him out of the tournament. Brandon, what do you think?
He's done a great job this year, by the way. We should not discount the fact that Josh Pastner has done a terrific job from the hot seat to making a team relevant. He's done a good job this year. Absolutely.
He's been great. Jose Alvarado, I think, is a player of the year candidate.
Without question.
He's been really great. Brandon, I'll throw the question to you too. And keep in mind Syracuse and Duke tonight. I think that's a pretty big game that could, you know, eliminate one of these two from this conversation.
Yeah, I'm with Dana. I sort of struggled to see it with Syracuse. Like, Notre Dame's offense has been good, but they just don't defend. Like, I mean, they defend like I defend at the YMCA, which is just nothing. So like I have struggled seeing that. And also, you know, this is still a Syracuse team that doesn't have a big, their defense is, you know, to go down 20 against Notre Dame, like that's a bad look. That's really bad.
You have to take a look at that, I think.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's not any, like, coming back and winning that game is like Dana said, that's not all that impressive to me. I actually, you know, Josh Pastner's done a good job, but I'm a little bit disappointed with Georgia Tech. You know, you look at those first two games for them against, I think, you know, Mercer and maybe like Georgia State. Losing those two games might be what keeps Georgia Tech out of the tournament, because otherwise, like, they have some nice conference wins and they're a good team. Like, we talk about Jose Alvarado, but Michael DeVoe is good, Moses Wright is good, and like this was supposed to be the year for Pastner. Like, this was the year that all of these guys were experienced, they were older, no postseason ban. Like, so for me, I actually look at it as sort of an underwhelming season for, like, it's great that they're as competitive as they are, that they're on the bubble at all, but you know, with the talent that he has, the experienced talent, I expected more from the Yellow Jackets. So I still think Duke has the best chance. It's going to take a remarkable end of season run. Like, let's not discount the fact that, like, Duke lost to Miami 3 weeks ago. Like, you have to overcome some of those hiccups from earlier this year. But no, at the same time, like, the Virginia win, you know, there's a reason why we were talking about it so much. That's a huge boon for the Blue Devils. And yeah, just when you talk about talent, you talk about Coach K, like, It's hard not to feel good about the direction that Duke is moving. It feels like they sort of shed their skin a little bit. And of those three, I really think Duke is probably the only one that has any real chance of getting in.
Brennan, I want to see video of you playing pickup basketball at this point.
At the next athletic summit, we will make sure that we get plenty of...
Just cherry picking outside by the three-point line, throwing your hand up the whole time, and then not getting back on defense. Lastly on the show, before we go, I do want to hit on Boston College, because probably 15 seconds after we finished our show last week, they fired Jim Christian. They did that after he went on the ACC teleconference in the morning. Like, why force somebody to go do that? Like, I don't think anybody's like disagreeing with the decision to fire Jim Christian. He probably deserved it after going 78-132 in seven seasons. The timing just seems strange of this whole thing. I don't quite know why you do it at this stage of the season, or make somebody go do the ACC teleconference before you do it. But maybe we should have expected that from the administration that nearly forced him to play with four scholarship players.
Sure.
1 week. This is a job I just have no idea about it. So I'll throw it to you two. And Dana, I'll start with you. What do you make of this Boston College job? This is a program that has not been to the tournament since 2009. That's the longest drought in the ACC. They haven't had finished over 500 in the ACC in a decade. That seems like a really tough job up there. And I really don't know what direction you go, and I don't know what kind of ceiling you can put on that program right now.
Yeah, I've always felt, and you know, going back to the good old Big East roots, I always felt like when BC left the Big East for the ACC, I understood what they were chasing in terms of the money and football, but it never fit. I mean, I always felt like the program was never, I mean, Syracuse in the ACC doesn't fit either, but Syracuse at least has some name branding that can carry it into that transition. Boston College never even had that in the Big East in terms of like just a big name brand program for basketball that was going to just make inroads in the ACC. So I always felt like this was going to be a very difficult climb for them. And I think that's what we've seen. I think they are just kind of on this island by themselves and don't really fit. And it's a league that's difficult to climb. What they need is somebody, I mean, who knows the landscape a little bit of the Northeast, in my opinion. I mean, you need somebody that's got some high energy, because it's a ton of work. So, you know, the logical choices are somebody like John Becker from Vermont, James Jones from Yale. I mean, these are guys who are familiar with, you know, with the Northeast, or familiar with, you know, New England. Their guys, I mean, especially James Jones, who works at Yale, he doesn't have scholarships. It's a huge step up. So these are people who are willing to work hard. You might be able to convince a young assistant to take a risk, but, you know, young assistants who are really quality guys are going to be savvy enough to wait and see. Like people mentioned Kyle Neptune at Villanova. I mean, he can get a good job. That's not a very good job, frankly. I think he could do better at some point. So I'm not sure. I mean, maybe he takes a leap at it. I'm not sure. But I think that's what you need. You need somebody who is going to get players and groom players for 4 years and make a program with a foundation, because you're not going to go out and win the recruiting wars right now.
Brandon, what do you think? That's a strange job. I know we joked last week. We're like, they should hire Jared Dudley. He's out there, BC alum, big name. Yeah. Just go hire him. I don't know what direction you go. What do you go with this?
Yeah, I agree with Dan. I think the biggest thing for that job is the Northeastern ties, because, you know, you look at someone, you bring in like another mid-major guy who's got, like, you have to have someone who understands that landscape. And, like, you know, maybe they put in another call to Tommy Amaker just to get told no again. But, like, you need someone who understands that region, who understands the challenge you're going into, who understands that it's going to be a process. It's going to take time. You know, this is a team right now that's relying on, like, transfers from Quinnipiac. And for an ACC program, that's just not good enough. Like, Rich Kelly can't be your best player in any given game. And especially now you're looking like, you know, their best player, Winston Tabb, is in the transfer portal. So you're really starting with nothing in the cupboard. And I do think that it'll ultimately be a guy like Becker. I think it'd be a great fit for him. I know a couple of people have thrown out John Shire from Duke as potentially being interested. But like Dana said, I think he can wait for a better job than that. Like, I don't think he needs to put himself in that position. It's certainly tough. There really isn't any recent history of success. You said they made the tournament in 2009. That's more recent than I would have guessed. And that's probably all you need to know about where Boston College basketball team is right now. But I think you got to go with someone high energy who knows the region. And frankly, someone who's willing to put up with a couple of years of suck and not lose that same level of energy.
All right, we can't close the podcast on BC talk, so let's pick out one game this week for a prediction. I feel like I got a vibe from both of you what direction you're thinking Syracuse-Duke tonight is going to go. So let's look at Saturday's game, Florida State at UNC, because I think that's an interesting one. Dana, who you got in that game?
Well, I agree with you. That is an interesting one because, you know, like I said, we always just like to overlook Florida State and assume that they're not going to be there at the end. But experience wise and logic wise, you should pick Florida State, which is exactly why I'm going to go with North Carolina. Because I'm going to be completely illogical here. Again, I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like Carolina's dancing on the edge of something kind of here. I think their bigs can get things done. I think they're going to have a wave of confidence. I really do. They're going to, you know, where they have Miami in between. I think Carolina takes that one. I'll be dead wrong.
Brandon, over under 71 points for the freshman from UNC in that game.
I'll go under comfortably. It's crazy though. So UNC sets a freshman record with 71 points scored. That breaks a record set from 3 weeks ago when the freshman had 58 points against NC State. So like the freshman class is very clearly getting better. I'm going to go with Florida State in this one. I'm going to be at this game. I'm very excited about it. Again, crossing my fingers, crossing everything I can that it actually happens. The thing that I look at is this. UNC against Louisville absolutely thrived on second chance opportunities, as it always does. UNC second nationally in offensive rebounding. That advantage isn't going to exist against Florida State. Florida State's 15th in the country in offensive rebounding. If UNC is not getting those second, third, fourth chances around the basket, I think that they might struggle to be as efficient offensively as they have in the past. So for that reason, the fact that sometimes UNC's three-point defense looks like mine, I think you put those two things together. The one thing that is working in UNC's favor is this is a home game. Florida State hasn't been as great on the road as they have been at home. So I think it's going to be close. I will ultimately go with Florida State, though. I think that right now they're more cohesive, and I think that their bigs are going to be able to nullify enough of UNC's offensive rebounding percentage and that advantage the Tar Heels usually have.
What do I get when I win?
You can come back. You can host the pod next week. If you win, you can take over. Finally, we have some intrigue in the ACC. I felt like we were on the like such a flat line for the longest time. It's finally interesting. Dana, thank you so much for coming on the show and lending us your expertise here.
Anytime. Glad to do it.
All right. That's going to do it for the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Go follow all of us on Twitter. I'm at Andy Bitter VT. Brendan's at Brendan R. Marks. Dana is at Dana O'Neill Writer. That's no apostrophe, one L, writer at the end, all one word. Follow all of us for great insight on the ACC going forward here. If you haven't yet, go on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast. Rate, review us. We love great reviews. We'll take mediocre reviews, but we really like the great reviews. If you have not subscribed to The Athletic yet, do so now. You can listen to this podcast ad-free. That's at theathletic.com/ACC pod. We'll be back next week to talk some more ACC hoops.